there's a lot of things going on in the Broncos at the moment where they're just not gelling. You know, you heard Maguire say they're all trying. I probably believe that. But some of them just, there's other things going on at the Broncos that we're not being exposed to, and it just does not look good for them. And they've got an absolute horror run these next sort of 10 weeks.
Huge weekend with a long weekend of NRL, Steve. We're going to start with State of Origin. What else we got, mate?
Mate, we've got our stats expert, Will, on. We talk six again, and we also discuss the short dropouts and what the conversion rate's like for that. And not to brag, but the Broncos collected for me, put a red line through them, and they couldn't get up for the Titans.
They are done, but you know who's not done? The Penrith Panthers. What an absolute demolition, and we will talk about that as well. So let's start with State of Origin. The teams, the Blues, largely as we expected. Coruscant comes in for the injured Brayley, and Burton moves out, and Isaiah Katoa, who apparently was going to come in last time but had the concussion. Do you like those changes, or do you think there should have been more?
Look, mate, I don't mind it. They're, again, while we're recording, the teams are leaking through. There's talk Dylan Lucas will find his way onto the bench in the 17. You know, we did call that out, not having an edge forward. We saw Haumole Olakau'atu struggle with cramps at the back end of the game, so I do like the fact that Dylan Lucas looks like he's going to make the 17. I certainly would have that. And there's obviously going to be a lot of press and a lot of watch around Moses. So Moses coming into the team for Strange.
Strange, yep.
Yeah, with a fitness test to occur. Mate, for me, we've spoken about it almost every episode now. I would have left Strange there. I think it gives Cleary more ownership over the team. But to your point, mate, largely predictable from Daly.
Yeah, and the other thing we forgot is the great man, Payne Haas, comes back in at the expense of Mitch Barnett. It feels like it's a better balance now. Haas is going to get through so many more minutes. We talked about the excitement when they changed the eligibility rules that Fenua Blake and Payne Haas in the same team has a really good look. Mitch Barnett shifts to the bench. You would think that Isaiah Yeo is going to spend more time at prop, and you would expect that given the impact of Victor Radley and particularly Cam Murray, that those guys are going to get plenty of game time as well. We talked about our preference would have been to have Crichton not there and bring in Case McLean because he's just been absolutely braining it. He did have a bit of injury scare in the weekend, but yeah, pretty much as we expected, even if some of us had hoped that there might have been a few more changes.
Yeah, spot on, Hawk. It'll be interesting to see how a couple of those fitness tests come up. As you mentioned, McLean, you know, look, unless an injury occurs on the night, like Origin 1, McLean probably doesn't get on the field the way that the teams are lined up currently. So that may not be, you know, a loss with an injury concern, but that'll be a big one. And then the Moses thing. I think the Moses one has the potential to change the way they're going to play the game. To your point, for me, though, the huge plus for New South Wales is Haas. You know, you'd like to think Toho can't have a worse first 20 than he did in Origin 1. And, you know, let's hope Crichton can't either. So you would expect those middle forwards to have a little bit of an easier run than they did that first 20 in Origin 1. And Haas will just capitalise on that. He's been absolutely huge the two games back against the Dragons and the Titans the last couple of weeks. So expect him to really have an impact. And I can see that then capitalising even further when the two quick middle forwards, Murray and Radley, come on. So when we get to Queensland, well, they've also made a change that I think will help with them. But, yeah, I'm expecting when they come on, they're going to be in a far better spot because I can't see it being any worse than what it was in Origin 1, which will really open up the game and make it a real quick environment, especially if it's a dry track down in Melbourne.
Yeah. If you look at the actual game, Queensland scored all their points when we were continued to turn over possession and they were camped on our line, as you'd expect teams to do. But then it dried up for them. And actually, we only scored the one try, but there were times there we were actually dominant when we held onto the ball. So maybe in the aftermath, we were a little bit harsh. Also, a really good point from one of our listeners, Troy, who commented on the reel when we talked about Strange coming back in, and he said, well, like, we're quick to forget Moses has been exceptional at Origin level, and yes, Strange did a great job. If you're looking for more consistency and class and quality, that probably Moses is the right pick. And I kind of tend to agree with him when you look at it from a bit more perspective, and we've had a bit of time to actually think about it. And like, what a absolute luxury to have Ethan Strange now on the bench. It will be really interesting. What's clear is that we're going to hang on to the ball in that first half. And if we do, and we get a run of possession, then I think it'll be a closer game. So let's shift to the Maroons. So they've had some force changes, but they've also brought in a few guys. You like the look of how they've lined up now?
I do, mate. We spoke about after Origin 1, the Maroons are going to have to make a decision on what they do to counter Murray and Radley. And they've made the decision to push Plass back to the bench. They're going to start with Nicara on the edge and push Cotter back to 13. So I actually think that gives them a little bit more size, a little bit more experience through that back row to start the game. And then I think Plath's quick legs and line speed in defence, I think they're going to try to use that to counter the Radley and Murray. And then they've added Kulikefu Finifuliaki onto the pine. So obviously an edge forward, but really quick leg speed, runs a great hole. So he's also one that they can bring on. And then that gives them coverage. Obviously, Capewell's extremely flexible and can play in a number of different positions. They won't want him to have to play in the centres for too long after what we saw in Origin 1, but he is an option. So I think those sort of changes will certainly help them and just the way they're going to play. But no question, Pat Carrigan is going to be a huge loss. I thought he was one of their best, especially considering he came off the bench and didn't get huge game time in that opening stanza when it was all Queensland's way. So that will be a huge loss for Queensland. And then the interesting ones, you know, Billy Slater doesn't get too many wrong on the selection room, but Reece Walsh is just one for me, absolutely out of the blue, which I know sounds crazy since he was the fullback on the Kangaroo Tour only 6 months ago, but his form of late has just not been to the standard that they expect. And some of the defence that we saw, especially against the Titans, he was nowhere to be seen. So, obviously, you're a brave man to second-guess Slater's selections. He very, very rarely, if ever, gets them wrong. But this was one that certainly raised the eyebrows for me, seeing Walsh in that 18 jersey.
Yeah, there was a clip doing the rounds on socials of him quitting on a play when the Titans player burst through the line. I will say this. You imagine if Walsh had came on when they were dominating with like 10, 15 minutes to go in the first half, he would have caused absolute chaos. So it's a scary proposition for the Blues. Yes, he may be out of form, but he's all class. And he hasn't been, like, he's had some poor moments, but he's also had some unbelievably good moments in a pretty awful Broncos team. So that's a good look. I think Nicara coming in is actually a much better fit. He probably didn't get the chance to do his skills justice in game one. He came on when the game was in a very different situation. So, yeah, it does look a better balanced team, which is a concern, but hopefully it's a great game. There's a bit of talk that maybe Murray Taulagi comes in and actually starts for Fifita, but I'd be surprised if they go that way, given Fifita more than held his own in that first game.
Yeah, you're right, mate. You talk about balance, and that's the reason Reece Walsh is there, right? They don't want to have to move Hammer back to fullback if something goes wrong and have Capewell out in the centres while he, you know, holds his own and does the best he can. He's not a centre at that level. So that's why he's there. But, yeah, for me, it is a very big head-scratcher. You know, he's all about effort. He's all about repetition. He's all about, habits. And Reece Walsh just hasn't been performing of late. So that's a big one. But, yeah, all in all, I like the Maroons team. It is better balance. And with the exception of Carrigan missing, they'll be extremely hard to beat down there in Melbourne.
Yeah, agree. Do you think New South Wales will be, given they've given those same that same team pretty much, apart from a few obvious changes, do you think they'll be better for the run and it'll be much more competitive?
I can't see New South Wales making the errors that they did early. I can't remember that happening for a long, long time, mate, especially with Brian Toole. I mean, he's been one of the most reliable players at any level for the last 4 or 5 years. So I can't see that being a recurrence in game two. So I assume that the early stance is going to be a lot tougher, a lot tighter. So, you know, there could still very well be points in it. But if you know, Haas does his job in the middle like we expect him to usually do and the error rates are down for New South Wales, I think their tactic will be to play the long game. You know, we've seen over the last probably 2 years, maybe even longer, that the second halves have been owned by New South Wales. They've run away with a number of games in the second half or caught Queensland's lead. So I think their game plan will be come out strong, really defend well, kick chase and make sure there is zero errors, and then really come home with a wet sail in the back end, I think will be their tactic, mate. How do you see it playing out?
Yeah, I think if New South Wales hang on to the ball, I think it should be an absolute belter. And if we get some momentum, you look at that 1-2 punch, Haas, Fanua Blake, and then you get the leg speed of Cam Murray coming on, Victor Radley, who made such an impact as well. We should go well, but we talked about the better balance for the Maroons. Getting Ruben Cotter in there in the middle instead of having to play on the edge, and the same thing, Plath coming on at the back end of the half, causing chaos. Fini Fuiaki has been doing that all year. It should be an absolute belter if both teams hang on to the ball. Always feel confident, but we've been burnt so many times before. So, we certainly don't want to get carried away with that. It'll be interesting because I think Daly probably got his interchanges spot on in game one. I don't know if, in hindsight, whether Billy Slater did. Should he have brought in Shibasaki to replace... of complete brain fade.
Ponga went and Kate
Wilder. Yeah, that's right.
In hindsight, I guess you're Monday morning quarterback. I think you should have. And that's why you look at the side this time with Walsh there, Murray Taulagi at 19. You know, there is a better coverage for those outside backs. There's probably not a lot of coverage for the halves. You know, it looked like Ponga would have to come in or they'd have to play Plath sort of like a makeshift. But, you know, hard press to cover off every position, even with the six. So I certainly think, yeah, in hindsight, he probably would have done that. But, mate, they almost pulled it off, right? This was a bomb that could have fallen in either Hammer's hands or Teddy's hands right on the bell. So he almost pulled out the magic. So they'll be very confident again. I think, you know, Queensland would have taken a lot out of that, a lot of learnings and even a lot of confidence for the fact that, you know, call a spade, if Ponga doesn't get sent off, Queensland win the game. So they'll take a lot out of that. And they know they've got a game three at Suncorp. Right, which is a huge advantage up at the Cauldron. So if they know that it gets to one all, the amount of pressure that will be on Laurie Daly, the amount of pressure that will be on Nathan Cleary, the selectors, you know, they'll be questioning, was Moses the right call? Was Tedesco the right call? Like, there's so many, so the pressure will automatically swing straight away. If Queensland can get to one all, it will be an absolute bloodbath in the press. So, massive game like every Origin always is, but I can see, I like the New South Wales team better than Origin 1, even with the Moses addition. Yeah. But just with Haas and a bit more balance, I do like it better than game one. So I am a little bit more confident than what I was going into the first one, mate.
Yeah, we've got a good record in Melbourne as well. Queensland have got a long history of makeshift halves going in and doing a job and winning games too. So I wouldn't worry too much about who they're going to put in for that position, because they'll just find a way. I think Slater's probably under pressure, obviously. Game two, must win. But as you say, if they can get a result, then it all comes back to that last game. Daly was already under pressure after a pretty poor game one despite the win. On the flip side, we've won one that probably we shouldn't have, so maybe we're in the box seat. Let's see where it all unfolds. All right, so we've got a new segment for you guys now. This is something we pre-recorded with the great man Will Bedell, and we'll throw to that now. New segment tonight, we've got the great man Will Bedell, who's worked in NRL analysis and stats for over 20 years, coming to offer his expertise. How are you, Will?
Yeah, good, thanks, Hawker. How are you, mate?
We had a good afternoon at football. I'm thankful I didn't get to watch most of that debacle that was just on then, but otherwise it's been a good weekend, mate. Okay, just before we get into some of the more detailed stats from the season gone, mate, what did you want to add from the weekend that you saw or noticed that needs brought to attention?
The one thing that comes to mind was the awarding of Tommy Chester's try in the Cowboys and the Dolphins game. I believe when the video ref said that he was playing at the ball. I mean, I don't know what tackling is. If you know, not every tackle is actually on playing at the ball. The fact that it came out, I think it was Selwyn Cobber who knocked it out there, and how that's awarded a try. I mean, yeah, I think coaches have said it, at different times. I think Wayne Bennett criticised the Ed Cossey try or no try. With the amount of money they're spending, I mean, I don't know what they're looking at. I think you would feel the same, Steve.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more, mate. I thought that was just it got to the stage where it was comical. You know, we also had the Ben Trbojevic play the ball that led to a try. And the referee's excuse at the time was that he had the sticky spray on his hands, so he was still in control of the ball. Like, it is literally comical. And to think that, you know, the reason Volandis originally took the game to America was for the gambling donor. How can anyone spend their own hard-earned betting on the game when some of these decisions are just unacceptable, mate? To Will's point, it's just not rugby league. It's not it's not the game that we've watched our whole lives. And for these decisions to continue when they've got all the analysis and all the camera angles for them to come up with some of the decisions they do, it's just unacceptable for mine.
Yeah, I don't understand. Why they think they're going to get it perfect, because there's still humans involved. And some of the decisions that they've been making, they make no sense. I'm with you on that one, Will. Anything else from the weekend, or should we dive into the broader season analysis that you've done for us this week?
Probably the only other thing that comes to mind was just how clinical the Panthers were. They had a big game against the Warriors, I think, the week before. There are a couple of experts out there who said that they thought that the Tigers would get them. I can understand the logic, but at the end of the day, like, it just goes to show, like, how good that club is mentally. They're such a mentally strong side to come off that to come off the win against the Warriors. Probably one of the key elements there was the fact that they had their stars who had them the week off, and they led the charge into that game against the Tigers, and they just put on a clinic. I actually felt sorry for the Tigers there with about 20 to go. I was hoping that, you know, like, they'd call the game off somehow, because it was
I was cheering on 70.
It was hard to watch.
You're right. The word clinic, it was clinical. Like, they were just absolutely relentless. One expert on this panel, Steve, he said, "I think the Tigers are in a bit of trouble," and he predicted this could be a bit of a blowout. And I don't think anyone has imagined it was going to be as one sided as that. It was unbelievable. Thoughts, Steve?
Oh, you're both spot on. Yeah, we called the Tigers just having those key players out that they'd really relied on. But to Will's point, the biggest thing I took out of that was just how ruthless and clinical the Panthers were. I know we'll talk about it a little bit later in the show, but you know, it's going to be a brave person to tip someone to knock them over now, let alone in the business end of the season, because they are just rolling both sides of the football and look super impressive doing it.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, Will, so we got you to dive into some specific stats around the value of the – well, let's start with the value of the short restart and see if the data supports the fact that teams are actually making that almost the predominant option most of the time.
Yeah. So pretty hard cold facts, but there's only a 15% in recovery rate from short dropouts, or from all dropouts, I should say. So obviously the recovered ones are going to be short, but yeah, there's only a 15% conversion rate of actually getting the ball back. So it's, you know, so it fits into that category of a very low percentage play.
Yeah. Do you think though that the idea that it's easier to defend right on your line than defend from 50 metres is part of that process as well?
Yeah, I think so. I think with certain teams, you know, like we tend to see it on a lot. If a team's had a lot of ball and they can't score, invariably you'll find that, I know I've said it in the coaching boxes, is that we actually need more space to attack better because, yeah, you know, like you can't get your depth right. It's hard to hit the ball at speed when they're bouncing off the line and they're in front of your face. They're landing on you as you're catching the ball. Sometimes you need that extra, you know, 20 or 30 metres to actually get into a bit more of a rhythm in terms of your attack. So yeah, I mean, I can see why it's being used. But yeah, it's probably, I'm actually happy to see them. Teams are starting to go long more often now, and I think that's the reason I like that is it because it's rewarding the kickers and their skills to actually land the ball in the end goal and hopefully get the ball back. That's the way that it should be. So I tend to like that, how that's starting to come back into the game, and I hope the numbers say, okay, let's go long more often.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. It was Ben and Shane Walker that introduced it, looking for every opportunity to regain possession. What do you think, Steve? You think?
Blown away. This is exactly why we got you on, Will. So I really appreciate it, mate. I'm absolutely gobsmacked. I knew it wasn't high, but to see it only down to 15% is a big one. You know, we debated before the season started, was this the NRL's way of trying to limit the concussions with that, you know, hit up off the dropout? Was it a case of, you know, trying to have those 50-50 contests because they knew what was coming with the six agains? There was all these unknowns, but to now have, you know, 13, 14 odd rounds of data, that's enough sample size to be able to show us. And 15% just simply for mine isn't enough to risk it. To Will's point, now the teams decide whether it's easier for them to defend up close or whether they kick the ball down the other end. You know, and I think that it come down to who they're playing in certain instances too. You know, yeah, if you're really trying to rush, you know, not that a lot of teams has had success against Penrith of late, but if you're trying to rush the attack, trying to limit their time, you know, to Will's point, potentially that's the better option, to kick short and try and really rush them and crowd them from the outside. And then if you've got a team who's really struggling with the ball and struggling to make yardage, then you get it down the other end and you try and give yourself a bit of a reprieve. So really interesting to see. So, you know, obviously, you know, Will's given us the inside scoop there, and a lot of the teams will now be thinking about, you know, whether not so much to get the ball back, but how we're going to defend our set. So that's, that's a pretty cool stat, mate. Really appreciate it, Will.
No, yeah, it'd be interesting to see what specifically comes out in the teams too, whether other teams are doing it better than others, because I know Parra seem to get it wrong every time. They can't defend it, the short ones. They can't seem to regain the short ones. And but I reckon there's probably a few teams that do it better than most as well.
Mm-hmm. I think you guys have actually got none in 2000. 2026. So,
fantastic.
Saying that, I think they've actually had the least amount as well. So, you know, you know, I guess when you're looking at the ratios there, and yeah, I think after today's game, they've got a bit more to concentrate on than our line dropouts, unfortunately.
Yeah, exactly. We did regather at the after the Dogs scored that penalty. We regathered there, but that was more from Dogs' mismanagement than from any skill from us. Yeah. Anyway, let's move on from them. We've spoken enough about them already. The other thing we talked about was the penalties and six agains and the impact that was having. What did you find there, Will?
Yeah, another interesting one. I don't know, like it's certainly not planned, but obviously the Bulldogs have been commenting a lot pretty much all year and coincides when they lose. Interestingly enough, about how they're not getting on the rub of the green and the referees are, like you can say that they're against them, or at least that's been the inference. They've actually conceded the least amount of them ruck infringements.
Interesting.
And we saw last week, was it against the Tigers, I think? It was 7-0, you know, to the Dogs. So, you know, the Tigers had seven on ruck infringements. So, yeah, I heard a few commentators and a couple of experts who came out and said through the week, you know, you've got to take your accountability internally. Like if we look at that game out there today, I mean, if they didn't win that game, geez, you know, like it's a long bow to draw there because they had all the cause in the first half and, you know, eventually they got the result. They certainly calmed down the ref this week.
Yeah, but hardly a emphatic victory. Like even the fact that we were in the game in the last 5 minutes to me just speaks volumes for how bad the Dogs are going, because their attack is, yeah. I mean, how much ball do you need?
Yeah, and like I do actually take my hat off to the Eels because they were courageous and they tackled their hearts out, but it's just too much, you know, like in this day and age as well, like you can't keep on inviting the opposition into your, the opposition into your half that much and just giving them that much ball, that much cheap ball as well, it's a tough one.
Yeah. What about just the season in general, Will? Like, how many more penalties and six against have there been?
So in terms of the total amount of ruck infringements for this year, currently we're at 934, and we had 1,200 last year. So
for the whole year.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wow.
So we're on track to beat that quite comfortably. One of the other interesting things that I found was if you look at the ruck infringements per round, from round two, we've actually come down we're starting to trend them down. Obviously the last couple of weeks or at least in one week after Magic Round, we had the split round, so I guess that doesn't count. But the two games after that, we've come way down. So whether you tie that into, I believe there were some conversations with some clubs and PVL about the six agains, that might have had something to do with it. And also it, I'm a bit of a I like to think about things, as you guys know, a bit deeply. So maybe it had something to do with the first official conversations that started around the broadcast deal. Who knows?
Mm-hmm. Well, no, I think you're
that's
right,
really Mark. Really interesting. I guess you know, rough math. They're probably up almost 50% on what we were talking about last year. But you know, we spoke about if the NRL was going to make a decision on peeling this back, that it would have had to have been a progressive thing, or it would have made them look, you know, fairly silly. So, hopefully for us all, viewers and even the players themselves, from what they've been telling us, that that the pullback continues. That's really interesting. Love to hear that in a couple more weeks' time to see if that trend's continued or not, because, that can only point in one direction if it continues for another few weeks for mine.
Yeah, absolutely. We'll keep you on track with that, Will. We'll come up with some other things to get you across in the coming weeks. Appreciate you coming on, mate. Thanks.
No worries, guys. Have a good day.
Cheers, Will. Too, thanks, mate.
Thanks, Steve. See you, mate.
Mate, that was really interesting, wasn't it, from Will?
It certainly was, mate. Yeah, two stats, especially there at the end with the dropouts and the six agains, that, you know, doesn't really get to the public too often. So to hear that off Will, the man who knows his stats and knows his job well, was really interesting. So can't wait to continue to dive into a few of those things that we don't usually get to hear or see, and see if some of these trends continue. We're almost halfway through the season now, so to see how they the back end of the season hits, because they'll certainly have an impact on semi-final time.
Yeah, absolutely. And we didn't go into this in depth when Will was on, but he has been involved with some very successful clubs. He was at Manly in their successful era in the late 2000s, and when they won the premiership in the 40-0, and then when they won it a couple of years after that as well. And then he's still working for clubs now, which he obviously can't divulge given the sensitive nature of the work that he does. But fantastic to get that insight from Will, and we'll make sure we get some other interesting facts. So if you're listening and you're thinking, I'd love to hear more about this, he has access to data that you won't find in the public domain. So very good, and we'll look forward to doing more of those each week. Now, we talked about some great matchups. The scorelines in a few of the games turned out that way, but some of the others were a bit of a blowout. We both talked about, we thought the Bunnies would have a good crack on Thursday night. Neither of us thought enough to actually pick them, but it was a good start. The Fosball celebration after he's re-signed for the next 3 years rolled on.
Yeah, it did. I can't believe everyone from KFC to Four Pines to everyone else in between has jumped on the Foz bandwagon. So I can only assume it would be a pretty special place to be around Manly at the moment. Everyone would be looking forward to coming to train each day, and just looking forward to being around each other and the group getting stronger. So look, bottom line is they were just too good for South. We spoke earlier with Will about the Trbojevic play the ball incident. That wasn't tremendous, which led to a try, but regardless, Manly were the better side and deserved to win. So, it looks like South to me, they've turned into Latrell or bust, which is a pretty big statement, I understand. At 6-6 now, they've got a Broncos game on the weekend that will be huge for them, without obviously Cam Murray, and then without a couple of the Broncos boys will be out as well for Origin prep. So that'll be a big game for South. But they don't look like they're anywhere near as threatening. I thought Fifita was strong in patches in his first game back, but he's obviously still a long way off being able to dominate for 80 minutes. So right now they're in a bit of a holding pattern, South. They could go down the ladder very quickly unless they can get a few wins on the board, mate.
Yeah, after a few losses, they've hit the logjam of teams, which we talked about in the season preview, from four through to it's probably only 10. There's a bit of daylight after that, but you imagine that the Storm, Bronx and Raiders, you would expect them to come back and challenge for that last couple of spots. But as you mentioned before we hit record, we are really starting to get to that separation of the really good sides and the rest at the moment, aren't we?
Yeah, we are, mate. You know, we wrote, we put a red line through the Broncos last week, and I just genuinely can't see them making the top eight, and the loss to the Titans was just an absolute death blow for mine. I've got a little bit more faith in the Raiders. They're sitting 5 and 8 at the moment, similar points, but I think the Raiders have got a bit of a softer draw. But, mate, for mine, those bottom six teams, I just can't see them making the eight. So, you know, then you're in a race from 11. That being said, mate, it's super tight. So you talk about South at 6 and 6. If they had have had two more wins than 8 and 4, they'd be running third. If they had to have had two less wins, at 4 and 8, they'd be running 14th. So it is super tight through that middle section. And beating teams in that same sort of bracket is vital. So you have to do away with those bottom four teams. If you don't pick up wins against them, you're no hope. And then winning against those other teams around that sort of 6 to 10, it's almost like a double victory for you. So, you know, when we talk about South and Broncos this week, huge game for them on the ladder board.
Yep. Now, we talked about this Friday night game being a belter, and it was. I thought the Knights were pretty unlucky not to win in the end.
Yeah, I agree with you, mate. For mine, this showed me a lot for both teams. I thought this showed to me the Knights are the real deal, right? Now, regardless of what's happened at the Storm the start of the season, they've had a bit of a run these last few weeks where, you know, they're 4-1 in their last five games. They've started to understand this new style of football, whether they like playing it or not. They're starting to get their heads around it. So for Newcastle to go down there and play the Storm and go so close to getting a win, it just shows that the Knights are the real deal. So, you know, as the back end, as it starts to warm up, they get the home games, full house at Marathon Stadium, they'll be super hard to beat Newcastle. So another one of those teams that have put themselves in a really good spot with 8 wins. They've only had the one bye leading into this round. So they're in really good situation. If they can keep those backs fit, you know, they went down there without Best and a couple of others. Sandon Smith, we mentioned, was going to be a huge out for them at 7 and still got so close. So they're a real danger team in that top 8 for mine. But then also it showed me that the Storm, you know, what, they're not going to jump up and win a premiership this year, but they're far from over. So, you know, if you look at the bottom 8 teams, they're the only team that have won more than 2 and 3 in the last 5 games. So they're the only ones in that bottom half that are starting to put some wins together. So if they can get through that origin phase without the Munsters and the Grants, it'll be huge for them. I can still see them rallying and jumping, getting a spot in the bottom half of the 8, the Storm.
Yeah, but they're going to have to keep improving because they weren't fantastic. The Knights only completed at 70%, and every time you thought they were back in the game, they dropped the ball again. And there's still plenty of stats around the Storm to suggest that they've got a bit of a way to go. But the fact that they're now in the contest and fighting hard suggests that they're going to be hard to beat every week. What I will say about the Knights, I did like, there's a bit of, the youngsters call a bit of dog in Ponga the other day. Like he was giving it a bit of shit when he turned Jerome Hughes inside out. Unfortunately for him, it backfired because of what transpired in the following 5 minutes wasn't good. But to me, it says that he's starting to get a bit of confidence in his body. The fact that he's prepared to do that because he's been a bit sheepish the last couple of years and because his body's been letting him down. But he is starting to play tough. And if they can hang on to the ball, get an even share, because they weren't even close, they're going to be certainly hard to beat for the rest of the season. I'm with you.
Yeah.
Roosters Raiders, again, tale of completions. I don't think we need to go into that too much. I don't think the Roosters were fantastic, but the Raiders just kept dropping the ball. It was unbelievable, the scoreline, given just how much the Raiders were in the game, but just couldn't complete sets and that's the modern game.
Yeah, the real big takeout for this for me has been Tedesco. So certainly from a super coach standpoint, Tedesco hasn't been as involved in the last few weeks. We tie that back. This could be potentially the new way for the Roosters, where it's really up to the six and the seven. And Tedesco takes that back seat that, you know, a lot of Roosters supporters have been hoping for a little while. So, you know, if Tedesco can start to pick and choose rather than try and insert himself behind the ruck at all times, I think that'll be a positive for the Roosters. But you're 100% error rate won that game, mate. Not much more else to talk about.
Yep, absolutely. Now, we've been big on the Dolphins all year, and despite the fact that they haven't got as many wins on the board as they would have liked, they are really warming into this competition, and they dominated across the park and across every stat measure in this game. They are starting to really come on, aren't they?
Red hot side, mate. Genuinely red hot side. If you want to talk about Panthers and Warriors, I don't have Dolphins that far off the Warriors at the moment. They're starting to really insert themselves as being one of the top teams in the competition. So if they get through the Origin period unscathed, because they've got a number of Origin players, five or six Origin players this year, that'll just give them a huge amount of confidence and experience heading into this semi-final series. So right now at 7-5, they look really, really good. Roosters this week will be a big contest. Especially considering both teams have got key players out, so it'll be interesting to see. It'll be interesting to see how they line up and who can get those 2 points. But for mine, the Dolphins are going to be very hard to keep out of the top four, even though those four teams currently are in red hot form.
Absolutely. If you just look at some of the stats, run meters, they had 2,000, nearly 2,100 to 1,300. Post-contact meters, they smashed them. And then tackle breaks, yeah, they are starting to look dominant like we expected, and they could get in a bit of a roll as we go forward. Titans-Bronx. Now, I was out last night, so I didn't – this is the one game I didn't get to – or yesterday, I didn't get to see – but everything that I've read and seen since suggests that, as you predicted, the Broncos are done. What are your thoughts, mate?
Yeah, while I predicted it, mate, I didn't see the Titans knocking them over. The Titans haven't been tremendous this year, both in attack or defence. So, you know, their stats aren't hugely better than the Dragons. They've been a little bit better than in defence than the Dragons, but they haven't been anywhere near where they needed to be. But the Broncos just didn't turn up. You know, I felt sorry for Payne Haas. I think that's the second week in a row where he's tried everything he possibly could. His work rate's been huge. But some of them just don't look interested. And then Ezra Mann's put himself in the position he has where he needs to try to play the miracle shot every time. And, you know, we all saw the overlap on the last tackle of the game, and he's decided to try and put the miracle grubber in. So there's a lot of things going on in the Broncos at the moment where they're just not gelling. You know, you heard Maguire say they're all trying. I probably believe that. But some of them just, there's other things going on at the Broncos that we're not being exposed to, and it just does not look good for them. And they've got an absolute horror run these next sort of 10 weeks. It is a nightmare, and they're going to have to win, we said, probably 6 to 7 games. And I don't like their chances, mate. I believe, no. I may be wrong, but I believe the Bulldogs are the only team they're playing below them. Everyone else is above them. So to win, you know, to win 7 of those next 10 or 11 games, I just genuinely can't see it the way they're playing, especially with Carrigan out for an extended period of time at the moment, mate.
Yeah, more concerning is they won nearly every stat category, and still couldn't get the job done. So there's something that is amiss there. Yeah, that last play, Ezra Mann, when they got the overlap, all they had to do was put through the hands going right, and Mann goes the all-in play. That's not the sort of thing that happens when people are on the same page and connected. And unfortunately for Madge, this was the talk. He gets teams up, but then there's a fadeaway, and that's unfortunately exactly what we're seeing. So interesting times, and it'll be very interesting to see how this unfolds over the next 10 to 12 weeks.
Yep.
Now, we mentioned when we spoke with Will, this was an absolute clinic. The good news for the Blues is it looked like Cleary's confidence had gone to a whole other level after what he did in the back end of that Origin game one. A couple of moments in particular, that pass It was the one that was called back to be forward, which again, we've talked about the refereeing. I can't for the life of me, but that is a player playing in absolute supreme confidence, isn't it?
Yeah, just dominant, mate, is the word for the entire game for Penrith, and then Cleary as well. They were just far too good. You know, there was talk, I didn't get to see the vision of it, but there was talk that the warm-ups for the two teams were similar to the results. Penrith looked like they were super keen. They were switched on. They were ready to go. And the Tigers looked like they just didn't want to be out there on the field. And that's what happened as soon as the opening whistle went. And Cleary is just in, you know, rare form right now. And that's saying something considering what we've seen him do over the last, you know, half decade to more. So right now, mate, I know I've gone on probably too much about poor old Harry Grant and not getting the pats on the back he deserves this year. But right now, Cleary should be so far ahead in the Dally M's that it's too hard for him to be run down. He's been very, very impressive, mate. And if someone doesn't figure out a way to knock this team over, they'll be all playing for second because they are so far ahead at the moment. And then they've got that big game experience come the back end of the season. So, you know, we'll mention the players getting rested after Origin, a couple of them. Cleary will be able to do that now. You know, they're 4 points clear. And they've only had one bye. Obviously, they'll have a bye this coming week. But he'll be able to really freshen them up. And there's no team with more big game experience than the Panthers. So, God, mate, they're going to be hard to beat the back end of this season.
They certainly are. As you say, they've got that luxury that they didn't have last year. I'll tell you what was really noticeable, and Vossi mentioned this in the commentary, Tristan Hope comes on and actually brings some energy, and you could just see that the complete contrast to what the rest of the team was doing. It made me think, since the Jerome Luai announcement, they've gone backwards. Surely it's had a bigger impact on the team than what they're letting on.
I think so, mate. Yeah, obviously we saw them get up over the Rabbitohs a fortnight ago, which was a monster win for them in the situation they were in. But to me, that they haven't looked like they've been that gelled, one team sort of bonded unit. You know, I cannot overemphasise the loss of Dewey. I thought he was probably their best player when he went down. They've obviously lost May as well out there in the centres. He didn't really start the season with an injury or a suspension anyway, but those two are big injuries, and then Twal on the weekend. They just were never in the contest. But to you, your point, there is no doubt in my mind that the Jerome Luai signing has had an impact. I'm not going to say it's derailed their season, because at 6-6, they're still well and truly in the fight. But they're going to find it hard. If you look at the teams in front of them right now, you know, we spoke about the Rabbitohs, you know, really relying on Luttrell. But from the Knights up, I don't know whether you can talk me into too many of them slipping out of the eight at the moment. So, yeah, if the Tigers are going to make a run, they need to turn around quickly. They've got the Titans this weekend. So that should be a game that they're expecting the 2 points. But if they come out and play like they did on the weekend, the Titans are going to get them. So it's a monster weekend for Benji to turn this performance around and start to get a bit of fire in the belly again, mate, for mine.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't know if you saw the social media doing the rounds where they did the prank about the two May boys signing for PNG. Maybe they should be focusing more on football than doing social media pranks. But anyway, that's another story. Now, this was my upset of the week, and at halftime I was thinking, mate, I'm on the money here. What happened, mate?
Mate, it was a completely different team. Well, completely different two teams, truth be told. While St George were the better team in the first half, I think that was as much of Cronulla not playing very well. Their completion rate in the first half just wasn't very good at all. That being said, St George really defended well in that first half. They defended hard. You know, a couple of those back rowers were really really making it difficult for the Sharks, and they weren't making ground early doors. St George just outplayed them. But that second half, it was flip the script. St George couldn't hold on to the football, and Cronulla just looked like the old Cronulla. You know, when Cronulla's running downhill, flat track bullies at home, that's exactly the way they looked in that second half. So, yeah, for mine, disappointing for the Drags. Hopefully that'll be a bit of a lesson for them that, you know, that you need to keep playing. It's not just a not going to come to you an easy win. But hats off to Cronulla in the second half. Their second half was one of the better halves of football they put together this season.
Yep, absolutely. Now, this last game, like I said when we were talking to Will, thankfully I had football today. We had a fantastic late win with an absolute bomb, a volley from about 25 yards, absolute scorcher. So I had a good day down there, and then I come home to watch the last 20 minutes, and it's like, oh, my God. Oh, and actually, the first 10 minutes when I turned on was like we scored back-to-back tries, and I was like, okay, maybe we're on here. But, mate, all the messages I was getting from mates, it was an absolute dog of a game.
Yeah, well, mate, we don't have a public holiday up here in Brisbane. We're hard workers, so I didn't get the game, but by all reports, I'll certainly be watching the replay. But by all reports, it might have been a good one to miss, mate. So I'm going to have to leave it to your comments on the Para Bulldogs.
Yeah, by the sound of it, they had all the territory, the Dogs, in the first half. Para defended really well, although what I did see in the second half might be more about the pop gun attack that the Dogs have had all year. And I did have a thought that if this had been a good team against Para, the amount of possession that the other team had, that it could have been absolute massacre. Will did say when we spoke to him earlier that credit to Para, they defended really well. Again, really young team out there. We're missing a lot of class still, where same conversation, and it's been pretty big in the Para Facebook groups lately, is that for the life of people, we can't work out where they're spending the salary cap, because it's a weak list when you look at it, particularly when you look at missing Pezzett, Moses. There's just too much. There's not too much quality missing. This is not enough quality in the squad. And again, it's even more damning on the Bulldogs that they couldn't put a bigger score on them today, I reckon.
Yeah, mate. Yeah, we've spoken about both teams quite a lot on the podcast. Not a lot of it's been positive. You know, you got to look at the Bulldogs have only scored 219 points in their 12 games. That's that's second last to St George. And admittedly, there's been a couple of teams have played more than others with byes, etc. But either way, that's just not anywhere you need it. They needed to fix their attack, like the Dolphins needed to fix their defence. Well, the Dolphins have certainly done that, and you've seen the results, and the Bulldogs haven't, and you've seen those results, right? So I can't see that changing for the back end of the year, mate. They may rally and get a couple of wins here or there, but I think that, as I said, that bottom six, I think that's just about it for the season for them. I can't see any of them making a charge for the eight, mate.
No, absolutely. It just still points to the fact that that Galvin and the rest of the team seem to be on a different page. And I don't think necessarily Galvin's to blame. There might be some trust issues there. There was one time that Galvin was blowing up because he threw a pass that, you know, some might say, oh, he threw it to no one. But if the winger had been up on the line and he hits it at pace, he probably scores. And there's something that is amiss there, and they can keep defending it all they want. But, yeah, there's something that is not right. I saw the chairman, Adam Jurisi, talk about during the week, you know, there are certain reasons why they haven't been going well, and I tend to agree with some of those in terms of the change of the game style. He did talk about injuries. I don't think you can blame injuries. They certainly haven't had more injuries than other teams that have been hit by them. The same question is got to be asked. They had a whole lot of quality players, which they let go. Bailey Haywood in particular, he's not, if you look at the contrast between him and Reid Marnie and how he's playing up at the Cows, it just makes some of the decisions they've made even more confusing, and we are where we are. They just look inept in attack.
Yeah, 100%, mate. At the end of the day, they, you know, you talk about Gus's recruitment decisions, whether he was recruiting for this new style of game or he was got caught on the hop, etc. Bottom line is the Bulldogs had a pretty small mobile pack to start with. So it wasn't like he had a big bunch of forwards similar to the Raiders where, you know, they've really struggled with mobility through the middle. Canterbury had a really, you know, one of the smaller pack of forwards in the comp, which was their knock on them last year, was that they were too small and they were getting pushed around. Well, this year it should be working for them and it's not. So, you know, we just heard off Will earlier, which was a huge thing to say that they've been the least penalised side under the six again rule, even against what Giraldo is telling the public in every press conference that he goes into. So for them not only to have a really, you know, light on mobile pack, but then for them also to be very well under officiated, they need to have a look at it, mate. They need to have a look at it quick, because right now I haven't heard of too many huge signings for next year. And if they go into next year with a similar 17, they're going to find themselves in a similar position on the ladder, mate. I can't see there's any other changes happening.
Absolutely. And you think the pressure will continue to come for Gordon Serrato as the season goes on. Mate, good episode today, mate. I'll see you Wednesday.
Can't wait for it, Hawk. Looking forward to it, buddy.
All right, mate. See ya.